Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Good evening, everybody. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. On the air, 7 minutes after the top of the hour. And this program is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Welcome to your Monday, February 26th, 2018 installment of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT. Sean Stiers filling in for Eric Hansen once again today. Sean and I will be together again tomorrow.
I'm going to empty my tank on this show today.
All right, bring it. You got to bring it.
All right.
And then Wednesday, I believe Eric returns, and then he's going to be broadcasting his portion of the program Thursday and Friday from the NFL Combine in Indianapolis. So he's going to provide conversations with Notre Dame players going through the NFL Combine process for us. So we will have that for you on Thursday and Friday.
I saw today somebody else in the building emailed me this thing. I don't know if he sent it to you too, where fans can actually register to get inside the showcase. The combine. I don't know why I call it a showcase. The NFL combine. You can actually get inside the combine and go down there and watch some of the stuff.
I don't feel like that would be an overly exciting thing to do.
I know why I said showcase, because this sentence right here says, register now to see top NFL prospects showcase their talent.
Yeah, in shorts, running, jumping.
That's right.
Grabbing stuff. It is what it is. It's not the greatest TV, but the NFL Network gets a lot of run with it.
They actually get
some people to watch it, but in person, I'll think I'll pass. Doesn't sound like a spectator sport to me.
No. Five Notre Dame guys down there, though.
Mm-hmm.
So,
a lot of interest.
Obviously why Eric will be down there.
He will be talking to all of them, and I believe they're all going to be available to the media on those 2 days.
Yeah.
So we'll get a lot of good feedback from those Irish players, and we are probably, I would say, a little over a week away from getting spring practice underway. That is right around the corner, plus pro days coming up at Notre Dame. So we got a lot of interesting things happening in football. We've got the NCAA men and women's basketball tournament right around the corner. So now we're getting to kind of a different time of the year with Major League Baseball starting in about a month and a few days. So we're getting very, very close to a very interesting time of the year. So what do we have for you tonight? Mike Bray, Bonzi Colson met the media within the last 2 hours. We're going to bring you some of their comments. Where do we stand with Bonzi now? We actually found out today, let me set this up right now, that Thursday and Friday, Bonzi did not practice with the team. He just did individual work and shooting. So he has not been involved in a live practice until he was scheduled to after our media session.
Okay.
So I want to clear that up. He never did really practice with the team. It was just workouts like Anthony Anderson from the Tribune when he was on talking Notre Dame women's basketball. Oh, by the way, I just saw Bonzi working out with Ryan Humphrey. So we knew he'd done some workouts on the floor, but he has not practiced with the team until he was scheduled to today. So we'll allow those two to update you on Colson's status for Wednesday's senior night game against the hapless Pittsburgh Panthers, who are 0 for the ACC season, starting 4 freshmen, and one of their best players is playing for North Carolina now. That defines their season in a nutshell. We'll also look back at Notre Dame rallying to pick up a win on the road against Wake Forest on Saturday, 76-71. In our next segment, in about 20 minutes, we're going to go two different directions. Notre Dame women's basketball, what a completion to their regular season, handling North Carolina State. Another conference crown, they share it this time with Louisville, and they go into the ACC tournament playing great basketball, Injuries are in the rearview mirror. They're just winning basketball games, and they're the number two seed in the ACC tournament. You'll hear from Muffin McGraw talk about that victory and one of the more satisfying banners that they're going to put up at Purcell Pavilion, considering all the things this team has gone through this year. Also, Notre Dame hockey, kind of a mystery right now. They're up, they're down, they're here, they're there. You called the game Saturday, I called it Friday. We saw two different teams, unfortunately, and that has defined this Notre Dame hockey team since clinching the regular season Big Ten title a couple of weeks ago. They have not played their best hockey, but I have a but to pass along in a little bit. Because I've been asked a lot about this Notre Dame hockey team, and since they've won 16 in a row, I mean, the record's not very good. It's below 500.
Well, when you look at it, they zipped through the first half of the Big Ten schedule unscathed, and then they won the first game against Wisconsin to start the second time through, but they did not win a series at all the second time through the schedule. So that's pretty night and day different when you look the first time through undefeated, second time didn't win a series.
4-6-1 since that winning streak, and I'll just say, but, and I'll get to the what comes after the butt in just a little bit.
Okay.
Just my thought. I'm not Don Cherry. I'm not Barry Melrose, but I can offer just my history of being around college hockey, what
you're
all this
there
means.
All the time, so that's a big factor.
I'll add my two cents.
You could do college hockey night. You could do college hockey night in America.
That's right. We got our My Five question of the day coming up in about 35 minutes or so. And this is for Sean, since he was around Muffin McGraw for a long time calling the games. The five biggest reasons why Muffin McGraw's had a Hall of Fame coaching career. Unbelievable coaching job this year. I don't follow women's college basketball enough to give a brilliant answer, but for anybody to top the coaching job she's done this year, considering all the obstacles, that other coach has had one heck of a year, because it's hard to top what she's accomplished this year with all those players going down with injury and really an 11-game winning streak without that true point guard on the roster. They made it work. They played defense. I'm sure there's going to be maybe Mississippi State's coach or somebody's going to win National Coach of the Year, but it's hard to top what she's done this year. Muffet's done as good a job as anybody under the circumstances.
Yeah, I don't know how you could give it to anybody but her, because of all, when you're talking about all the ACL tears and going back to last year, even they were going to be without a player anyway who tore an ACL.
So. Sean, she'll get punished for the excellence the program has been the last 10, 12, 15
years.
Maybe
so.
You watch.
Because that's what usually you give it to someone who
comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, who exceeds the expectations, far exceeds the expectations. Now, if you said, if they started the season with the group of players that they have right now without all the injuries, I'm sure they wouldn't have been ranked in the top five, I wouldn't think anyway. And so that would weight it differently probably than right now.
Well, Mississippi State was in the Final Four last year, and they beat UConn, right? And then
yeah,
they lost to South Carolina.
Ended UConn streak.
So maybe they don't get the benefit of the doubt, their coach, having been really, really good last year. But it's hard to argue against voting for her. She's done an amazing job this year. Next hour, more on the Irish beating Wake Forest. You'll hear from Martin Isgeben. And if you're with us on Friday, Sean asked a heck of a rapid-fire question, and both choices turned out to be true. We'll talk about that coming up in a little bit. We have the Big Ten bracket now to take a look at in beautiful New York City. They just posted a picture on one of the Big Ten Twitter accounts of a street in New York with one of those, I guess, little arrows for every team pointing which direction.
Okay.
To Madison Square Garden or whatever, I wanted to write back to them and say, all those arrows are pointing to Chicago and Indianapolis where the tournament should be. But I thought, I'm not going to get deleted just over that.
Right.
Rapid fire and a quick look at the start of the IHSA boys basketball tournament tomorrow. And we'll have Penn and Mishawaka coming up tomorrow. 6:30 tip, 6:07 pregame here on 96.1 FM WSBT.
Yep, extended pregame. You'll hear from both Mishawaka Athletic Director Dean Huppert and Head Coach Ron Heklinski in the pregame tomorrow.
All right, that's tomorrow. And game two is LaPorte and Adams.
Correct.
That's at 8 o'clock at Mishawaka High School. And we have a ticket giveaway coming up in just a little bit. Stand by for all of that. We will begin with Mike Bray, the head coach of the Fighting Irish basketball team. He met the media just about 2 hours ago, and here is a summary of his comments on the status of Bonzi Colson, out since early January. Foot injury, needed surgery, out 8 weeks, did some work on the floor Thursday and Friday. Again, scheduled to practice with the team today for the first time since that injury. And here's what Mike Bray had to say about the status of his All-American, Bonzi Colson.
We're trying to get him in. We will get him in some 5-on-5 today. You know, his strength numbers and range of motion numbers are better. You know, they're not all the way back to where he was in early December, but we want to be smart, and that's, it's great that we have those analytics and those measurements that we do in the fall to have a baseline. But he's been doing a lot of individual stuff with Coach Hump and a lot of different things with Tony, jumping on that leg, you know, getting that thing conditioned again from coming up and coming down. But I think today we try a little bit of 5-on-5 and kind of see how he feels, you know.
Still unsure if he'll play that?
Yeah, I think you're very unsure about what that would mean for Wednesday. I think you got to see how much of 5-on-5 he wants to be in and how does he feel tomorrow after it.
Does he feel unsure?
I think there's a little bit of, you know, coming back. I think today is important for him to get in some 5-on-5. You know, he's really not competed against anybody, not even 1-on-1. All his stuff has been by himself or shooting on his own, but to have to move a little bit offensively and to slide defensively. Now, he's been simulating all those movements, but he just hadn't done it against an opponent yet. So I think for his frame of mind, he needs to kind of feel that again a couple times before he really plays again.
You mentioned when he first got hurt, no matter what, you were going to start him in this game. Would you still,
I still would like to start him if he's comfortable with that. Even if we feel he cannot play and give us minutes, I would love for this crowd to be able to give him a heck of an ovation on Wednesday. He deserves it. And then we'll sub him out real quick.
Even if it's 10 or grand.
Yeah, he's going to get back. We're going to get him back Thursday for the viewings and to be with his family. And then he will meet us in Charlottesville Friday.
That's about Matt Farrell's grandfather passing away. Matt's going to be away from the team, and he's going to rejoin the team in Charlottesville. But he's going to play against Pittsburgh on Wednesday. So Matt Farrell's grandfather passed away, unfortunately, over the weekend. But apparently he saw the game on Saturday and saw Matt
hit the big three.
He was with his family in the hospital and saw Matt hit that dramatic shot to help the Irish get into the win column. And we'll talk about that coming up in just a second. But here's a couple of comments from the man of the moment right now, Bonzi Colson. Are we going to see him on Wednesday against Pittsburgh? First, here is Bonzi this afternoon talking about how he feels right now.
Feeling good. Just trying to ease and get back into things slowly. And started today. I had to do a jump test and a force test that I had to do, and I improved on it from last week. So I'm just getting better and just trying to take it easy and still staying patient with it. Just see how it feels overall, you know, running on it, you know, defending, shooting, you know, going live is going to be big today. So just seeing how it feels, I think that's the most important thing. You know, I think, you know, these next 2 days, today and tomorrow, are going to be important, how my body feels after practice. And, you know, having great communication with Skip, Coach Bray, and T-Row, and just telling them how I feel, while I practice.
Well, Mike referenced at the end of his radio show on Thursday on WSBT Radio that there is still a chance that we may not see Bonzi again this year. So that's still in the back of my mind, but hearing the comments today, it seems very positive at this moment. Now, that's all before he actually gets into a 5-on-5 live situation. Once that happens, they're going to have a really good feel to what he might be able to do. And maybe just as important, if he's able to go through the entire practice today, how he feels tomorrow.
Yeah.
How does the foot feel? How does his body feel after doing something that he has not done since early January? So I think there's still a lot of parts moving right now. But I just get the sense, standing around listening today, that I feel like something good's going to happen Wednesday, but I have nothing to base that on. That's just my feel of the situation.
Hard to tell right now because we were kind of holding out hope that we might actually see him Saturday, and then it just seemed like things started getting more up in the air rather than more clear even going into that game. And so now after he's been able to get out there a little bit, do some pregame stuff and some work in practices late last week. I mean, still, because of what you said, how is he going to be able to go at least close to full throttle, whatever that is for him right now? And then maybe the most important thing is how it feels tomorrow after he does go out there and put it to a real test today.
I mean, he admitted, I'm a 10 to 12 minute guy right now.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be playing 30, 35 minutes. So he is realistic about what he could do for this team against Pittsburgh on Wednesday. And here's what Bonzi said overall, what he feels like he could bring to this basketball team at this stage. A guy, before the injury, was averaging 21 points and 10 rebounds a contest.
I know I'm limited minutes right now. I mean, I can't go out there and play 30, 35 plus. You know, I'm not ready for that, and I haven't played. So obviously that's the smartest thing to do, but definitely limited minutes and just see how I feel.
Guess I should have shut up and let him say that. I spoke too soon. Sorry, Bonzi, I'll let you speak first next time. But he's pretty realistic where he is right now, and he'll go through practice today. I would assume tomorrow's kind of a limited day before a game. We'll see. But the Irish will play their senior night game against Pittsburgh Wednesday night at 7 o'clock here on WSBT Radio. And you heard Mike say what he said earlier in this whole ACC season when Bonzi went down. His goal was, at the very least, to have Bonzi in the starting lineup so he can get the fanfare. And if he's not able to play, jump ball, either foul, or if you get the ball, you call timeout and you get him off the floor. As simple as that.
Yep.
So hopefully we don't have to worry about that. Hopefully we see Bonzi on the floor, because I don't have any reference point to what the NCAA committee would think about a guy like Bonzi coming back, what it would mean to their resume. I kind of feel like we're in uncharted territories, and I've tried to think recently of a team that was a bubble team that possibly got in because of a guy coming back from injury. Nobody came to mind, so I don't really have a reference point to go on. Will the committee use Bonzi Colson coming back? And if he looks good, as a huge bonus for this Irish basketball team. I wish I had an example to compare, but I have not been able to come up with anything yet.
The closest thing that I can ever remember is the year Cincinnati and Kenyon Martin. He was hurt at the end. It wasn't like he was trying to come back, but he was hurt, and as a result, it knocked him down a few seeds.
They were going to be the number one overall seed. They end up being a two seed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a seeding. I'm just trying to think about a bubble team.
Yeah.
That's what I've been really recommending, because I actually brought that up in the media session today. We were talking about different possibilities, and that whole situation caused Cincinnati a number one overall seed, but right. You lose one of your best players, you just can't value them the same team. You look at them differently, which makes me believe you got to look at Notre Dame a little differently because they would get their guy back. But I think the key is what he's able to do and how good he looks.
And that's the thing. It's not just, it can't be, well, he's not going to play in this Pittsburgh game, and now he's not going to play any ACC tournament games, but we think he's coming back for the NCAA if they were to make it. I think he's got to be able to come back and not just be effective. He's got to be pretty good so that he can leave some kind of real, impression on the committee going into Selection Sunday.
Well, eventually we're going to talk about seeding. We may save that for tomorrow, because Notre Dame appears to be a team that could be seeded at best as a 9 seed in the ACC tournament, worst case, a 12 seed. And there's a big difference between being a 9 and a 10. And I'm going to kind of save this for tomorrow, but I'll just tease it. If you get to a 9 seed, and that would mean Florida State losing twice and Syracuse losing once, if I remember correctly. If you're the 9 seed, you don't play the first day. So let me put it like this. Which would give Notre Dame the best chance to succeed, not only in the ACC tournament, but maybe more importantly, their NCAA tournament resume would get better by which scenario? If you're the 9 seed, you don't play on day one. That's good because Bonzi Colson plays one less game.
Yeah.
You would play, as of right now, Virginia Tech, a team you lost to at home.
Mm-hmm.
Payback time, baby, as Digger Phelps would say. So that's a quality win if you get it. More
sure.
So, well, I'll save that. If you win, then you get Virginia. So another chance for a marquee victory. That means you would have had to have beaten Virginia twice in a row, because you need to beat Virginia to get to the 9 seed.
Okay.
So you have to beat them twice in the same week.
Man.
Or you could be the 10 seed and play The 15 seed Pittsburgh, a win, but it does nothing for your resume. Nothing.
True. Because then you'd beat Pittsburgh twice in a week.
Yeah, exactly. And they're 0-17. You would, as of right now, play the 7 seed Louisville. Payback time again for the Fighting Irish. That's a very, very winnable basketball game right now. They're not playing nearly as well as when they beat the Irish earlier this year. And then you would play the 2 seed Duke. So which road do you want? Do you want the Pittsburgh-Louisville-Duke road, or do you want the Virginia Tech-Virginia road? Again, if you go the Virginia-Virginia Tech road, that's one less game that this team doesn't have to play, which is important with its depth right now and with Bonzi Colson coming back from injury, or a chance to go for sure deeper in the tournament by being the 10 seed, because then all you would have to beat is Pittsburgh and Louisville again as of right now. I'll give you my answer first. I'm going to take my chances on being the 9 seed. Because right now, this team needs some wow victories. Like the guy in Caddyshack on the boat when Rodney Dangerfield's coming. Right. You know, his eyes get really big. Right. That's the type of win Notre Dame needs right now for the resume. Those ones that make your eyes really, really big. Because the resume right now, there's some good things, but it needs some juice. And Virginia Tech and Virginia would be those type of victories. I mean, you would have beaten Virginia twice and Virginia Tech once. You think the resume looks a whole lot different? Absolutely. But if you beat Pittsburgh and Louisville, I don't know if you get that kaboom feeling. So I'm going to roll the dice. I'm going to go for the home run and try to go that route. Am I nuts?
It's easy to grin when your ship comes in. I think,
hey, you know, scratch my anchor.
when I sat here and I looked at it at first, the my eyes got big just thinking about you've got Virginia sitting there in the second round if you're the 8 or the 9 seed. And that's, I mean, they've only lost once.
They're always bad in the tournaments.
And you're right about the fact that if you're the 10 seed or worse, then you've got to play the extra game. And as you said, the only thing you get out of Pittsburgh is it puts another win in your win column. And that is absolutely it. And again, I think the higher seed you can be, especially after everything you've gone through, if you can be the 9 seed and you're Notre Dame, after everything you've gone through, 9 seed in the ACC, I think that's a pretty good starting point. And it also gets you one fewer game that you have to play. We were talking Friday about, as of right now, if you're playing that first day, even if you get Bonzi back with the foot injury and everything else, then you've got 5 games in 5 days if you get all the way to the championship. And I can't imagine that that would be good for Bonzi's foot. So the less stress that you can put on that in that stretch of days, the better. He still needs to get out there and look good and do all those things that we talked about. So playing that first day kind of gives you that, but at the same time, the less you can play, the better, even though the road would be easier if I say it may be easier and quit just because you don't have to play Virginia again. Yeah.
And Louisville is in the tournament as of right now, according to Joe Lenardi of ESPN Bracketology, but they're in the last 4 in line. By the way, if you haven't noticed, there's the first 4 out, and there's the next 4 out. And Notre Dame is in the next 4 out group all of a sudden. They are, I would say, team number 8 out of the out group. So they're basically team number 75 on the bracketology grid. So all of a sudden, you can see a little light at the end of the tunnel. It's still a long way away.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of work to be done. But at least they're in position now to make a move over the final week and a half of this season to try to make that push for the NCAA tournament. And the teams ahead of them, the first 4 out, Syracuse, UCLA, Nebraska, who's the 4 seed in the Big Ten tournament, Mississippi State, Washington, Boise State, Utah, and then Notre Dame in that number 75 position. So you're saying there's a chance, I guess. All right, we're going to take a timeout. When we come back, the play-by-play of the closing seconds of that Wake Forest win. You'll hear from Muffa McGraw from yesterday's press conference following the win over NC State. It's banner time once again for the Irish women. And also Notre Dame hockey. 4-6-1 in their last 11. What does that mean? Answers coming up halfway through this hour on 96.1 WSBT. 26 minutes in front of the top of the hour. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Along with Sean Stiers, I'm Darren Pritchett. My five question of the day coming up in our next segment. Still to come, we'll take a look at the Big Ten tournament bracket. Rapid fire, a peek into the boys' basketball sectionals in Indiana that starts tomorrow night, including right here on WSBT Radio, 6:07 pregame, 6:30 tip from Mishawaka High School. It's the 4A Mishawaka sectional matchup between the Mishawaka Cavemen and the Penn Kingsmen, a rematch of one of the more exciting regular season games as Mishawaka got up off the mat at the Penn Palace and stunned Penn with a fourth quarter rally. Can they go 2-0 against their arch rival? We will find out tomorrow night. We do know this. The winner will not celebrate long because waiting in the wings is the undefeated South Bend Riley Wildcats.
Man.
Arguably the number one team in the state. They've kind of fluctuated, but they are 22-0, and they are ready for a big-time push after being arguably one of the best teams in the area last year. Then they got stuck playing Adams in the first game, and Adams pulled off the upset, and their season was over without a postseason victory. Almost hard to believe.
It really was. That was the one that we talked about so much when the sectional draw came out last year. And
you knew it was going to happen.
You don't have necessarily – it's still going to be a good first-round matchup between Mishawaka and Penn, but you've got the three teams with winning records, Mishawaka, Penn, and Riley, are all on the same side of the bracket at the sectional this year. And like you said, you've got Riley. At least they got the bye this year. They might be the best team in the state. At least they're one of the two teams that got a bye in the first round this time.
Said all complaints to the IHSA, not us.
That's absolutely right.
Notre Dame basketball team looked like they were in trouble against one of the worst teams in the ACC Saturday. On the road, the Irish down 69-60 with 8:08 to go. Wake Forest is 11-17. Now, they beat Florida State on their home floor earlier this year, so they are capable. But Notre Dame had their backs against the wall. You lose this game, the NCAA tournament is maybe out of the conversation, barring a miraculous run in the ACC tournament. You have to beat the lesser teams. And Notre Dame came alive, a 16-2 run. Their defense started playing better. Matt Farrell hit a three-pointer with 3:19 to play to put Notre Dame in front, 71-69. Wake Forest able to tie the game. Then in the closing seconds, Notre Dame needed a big-time shot, and there's a guy on their roster that's pretty good in these situations. Here is how it sounded on WSBT Radio Saturday afternoon with the voice of the Fighting Irish, Jack Nolan, on the call on the Notre Dame Basketball Network.
In the event they miss, 7 on the shot clock, 6, 5. Farrell dribbles around, a screen from Gavin. 3, 2, 1. The three on the way. Got it!
Play defense. Play defense.
5 seconds left. Here comes Crawford.
And the rest is history. Farrell got the job done. Notre Dame held off Wake Forest, winning 76-71. Yeah, there were a couple of guys open, but the big guy left. And Farrell's just like, and I don't blame him. The senior, you got to win this game to keep all the hopes alive for those other big things. Who do you want pulling the trigger? Matt Farrell or the rest of the team? I'm going to take my chances with Farrell to get the job done. And he smoked that three, one of the biggest shots of his college career, keeping a little hope alive in that Irish locker room.
Yeah, I mean, three guys scored 20 points or more for Notre Dame on Saturday, and everybody else, the next closest guy was 4 points. So when you look at that, you look at whose hands the ball is in, you're talking about a senior and everything that he has done. I think you're absolutely right. Keep it in his hands. Let him take it. And it's a tie game, too. Worst case, you're potentially going to overtime. Let him take the shot. It was not the easiest shot in the world by any means, but he pulled up and he made it.
Mike Bray, take us through that sequence.
We didn't want to go to 7 on the shot clock. And we screened Marty into a ball screen. But as he was dragging it, I could see it in his eyes, like, I'm taking this one. And, but we did execute really well there. And again, we were so active defensively.
And Farrell made it happen, hitting that three. Irish wins 76-71. Yep. And
Go ahead.
I was just going to say 17 and 12, 7 and 9 in the ACC.
You know, what was crazy is then on the next play, after they get everything sorted out, they went to the replay and the clock didn't start after Wake Forest had inbounded. So they had to go back, figure out how much time had to be on the clock and all that. And that took forever. And so then they get it all sorted out. And then Danny Manning calls a timeout after they had all that time to talk scenarios. He goes ahead and calls a timeout. Okay, whatever. So then they're inbounding. In the inbound play, the guy, you know, Gebbin is standing there guarding the inbounder, and the guy wasn't going to be able to get it inbounded, so he tried to throw it off Gebbin to get it to go out of bounds and give him a new count over there, and the ball just, it hits Gebbin, and then it just falls straight down, and Gebbin just picks it up.
Thank you.
And they had to foul him. It's like, yeah. And that was just like, and the TV crew especially, it's like, that was one of the craziest things ever, and it was just like, ho-hum, whatever. Now Gebbin's shooting free throws, and by the way, the game's over. So it wasn't what that to me was almost as crazy as the whole sequence with Farrell taking the shot.
And Jay Bell has been calling that game. He would have called that inbounds play terrible.
That's right. And it was, really. No. I mean, it was heads-up thinking because they had the big guy guarding the inbounder, and that's what you want. He didn't give him anywhere to go. Nobody really came over to try to help him, which was stupid on Wake Forest's part. But again, you know, it was a good play by Gebbin. He just looked down. It's like, oh, there's the ball. All I got to do is pick it up.
Well, on Friday's Sports Beat during Rapid Fire, Sean Adamus over there had a rapid fire question. Which is more likely to happen? Martinus Gebbin would post a double-double, or Matt Farrell and TJ Gibbs would each score 20 points in the game. I went with Gebbin because I felt like he was a really good matchup against Wake Forest. He was going to be a really good option. Gebbin ended up 10 of 18, 22 points and 14 rebounds. So check mark on choice number one. Choice number two was 20-point games by Farrell and Gibbs. Farrell, 6 of 13 from the field, 4 of 9 from 3, 21 points. TJ Gibbs, 5 of 12 from the field, 3 of 8 from the three-point line, 20 points. So thank you for putting together a question with both answers being correct so we couldn't lose. But I went with Gebbin. I think you went with Gebbin.
I did.
And he had an unbelievable basketball game, but then the two guards got their points as well. And as you stated, outside of those three, there was just a total of 13 points scored with 4 from Pfluger next in line. And man, from what I understand, he is in a boatload of pain right now.
Really?
I mean, the 25 minutes he played, he probably had to grit his teeth the entire time. Just watching him walk around today, he didn't talk to the media. He was sitting on the bench area, I guess, after walking out on the floor from the locker room. He just looked like a guy that was still awfully sore, that he just fought through a very uncomfortable afternoon down at Wake Forest.
Do we know what kind of back injury
we're talking
about? It's just
a bad bruise.
Okay. Man.
As they said in Forrest Gump, near the left buttocks and the lower back area.
They shot the free throw well, though. 18 out of 20. I mean, and then talking about that rapid fire question that we did, if Farrell doesn't hit that three, then Gebbin is the right answer all the way. But Farrell got it, and man, they needed every point from all of those guys, as it turned out.
Irish wins 76-71. Again, they host Pittsburgh Wednesday night at 7 o'clock on 96.1 FM WSBT. We'll talk about some of the seeding possibilities on tomorrow's program. That wasn't the only basketball story this weekend in our area, as Muffa McGraw's Irish women's basketball team yesterday defeated North Carolina State, a ranked team, 86-67. The win clinched a share of the ACC regular season title with Louisville. And, of course, Notre Dame lost to Louisville in Louisville, 100-67. Notre Dame has not lost since. And that means Notre Dame is the number two seed in the ACC tournament. And Jackie Young threw the mask away. She was cleared from having to use the mask. She started the mask, got rid of it, and she wrapped up the ball game with 22 points, sending the seniors out a winner, 86-67, and a very, very happy Muffa McGraw after the game, just talking about what this team accomplished. Winning an ACC title, yeah, they've done that every year in the league, but to do it with the four players going down with ACLs, constantly battling who's going to play. You've got walk-ons seeing time on the floor. I mean, a bizarre season, and you look up, Their record is absolutely as good as anybody in the country. And here was Coach McGraw talking about winning the ACC title this year.
I think it's the first deep breath I've taken since November 1st. I'm just so proud of this team and what they've overcome. We just kept losing people throughout the year. We never put our heads down, never felt sorry for ourselves. They just came back to work every single day. They stepped up, I think, individually and as a team. They handled the adversity. And you know, that's the kind of thing that we want to teach them. That's what sports does for you. It teaches you a lot of life lessons, and handling adversity is definitely one of them. So I couldn't be prouder of any team. This was definitely the most rewarding championship I think we've had. And, you know, I'll play every day, senior day, if Catherine Westfeld comes out and plays like that. She was unbelievable. Just a great game by Kat. I was so happy for our seniors, Kat and Coco, to send them off with yet another championship.
Listening to those comments, it didn't sound like just your... ho-hum, another conference title, which they have
definitely
so many of, but this one just feels a little different, and maybe they were at a crossroads. That game at Louisville, it seemed to just change their season, losing by 33 to an outstanding Louisville team. Ever since then, as Anthony Anderson from the South Bend Tribune talked about on Thursday, their defensive performance has look totally different ever since that loss. They're more focused on the defensive end. They're more active. And now with that offense, you put just a little bit of defense with that offense, despite all the injuries, they are still a very dangerous team come March. I'm not going to make any predictions because they don't have that true point guard, but they sure have made it work with 11 consecutive victories.
And that one of those victories is that comeback win over Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And I think that that had to go a long way as well, to be able to come back from down, 22, 23 points, and to be able to win by 14. And there were points in that game where they would get close, they would get within 9 or 10, then it kind of stayed there, and it looked like, well, maybe they're not going to quite get over the hump, but they just kept pushing, and finally overcame that deficit to beat them. And it's really, they've just been on a different level ever since then.
Arike Ogunbowale and Jackie Young are still two elite talents. And when you have two elite players, you can't overcome the type of injury season that they have had. Ogunbowale has been named today as a Naismith Trophy semifinalist, one of 10 players up for the Naismith Award given to the nation's top women's college basketball player. March 16th, the list will be trimmed down to 4 finalists, and she has averaged 20.3 points per game, number one in the ACC, number 25 overall in the country. You couple her with Jackie Young and Jessica Shepherd, who has been such an addition to this team from Nebraska. That's an awfully good 1-2-3 punch, and I feel like I'm leaving out Mabry, which should be right there in the conversation as well. So there's still a lot of high-end talent on this basketball team, and they have really led the way. And if they have not worn out by now, maybe a little tougher in the tournament playing games close together. But it's just hard to count out this group considering what they have been able to do this year. It just...
Absolutely.
They don't care about the injuries. They just keep plugging along. But again, you got your two elite players, and that makes such a huge difference.
Yep.
Really does. So, yep. Let's hear from Muffin McGraw just on her emotions.
I think there was still a lot of emotion from senior day, but also just a lot of emotion knowing that this team has really overachieved to get this far. And... you know, to come in without so many players and to be regular season champs again, I think it's a really emotional moment for me.
And finally, the game got a little interesting. NC State closed within 2 points in the third quarter. Then the Irish were able to get rolling and walk away with a 19-point victory.
Yeah, you know, I think we made some big plays defensively. We rebounded. We got deflections. We got steals. We got the break going. You know, we had a lot of transition opportunities with the ball screen that were very effective for us. And then Marina pulling up for three on the break, which was a little unexpected, but it worked. But, you know, I thought Jackie and Enrique and Marina, they came to play. I mean, they were not going to be denied another championship.
Irish, number 2 seed in the ACC tournament. They will not play until Friday at 6 o'clock in the quarterfinals, and they will play one of 3 teams, the 10 seed Georgia Tech, who will play the 15 seed Clemson. The winner of that game will take on the 7 seed Virginia, and the winner of that will play Notre Dame on Friday. The Irish are 2-0 against Georgia Tech, 1-0 against Clemson, 1-0 against Virginia, and the closest game was 14 points in those four contests. They won by 14, 16, 23, and a nail-biter, 53, against Clemson. So the bracket looks good for the Fighting Irish at the start of the ACC tournament, and it sure feels like we're going to have a little Notre Dame and Louisville part two at the end of the ACC tournament, and they keep their hopes alive for number one seed in the NCAA tournament.
I think that's what everybody's hoping for right now. See that rematch? That's the one that would cap the whole thing off if they could keep the streak going into that championship, and that would not just be the capper, that would be the catapult that would pretty much lock up a number one seed in the NCAA tournament.
Florida State's 12-4, good story, but if they're playing, we need Notre Dame-Louisville for the most interesting matchup in that ACC tournament title game. 10 minutes in front of the top of the hour, my five question of the day is next. Sean answers the five biggest reasons why Muffin McGraw's had a Hall of Fame coaching career. We'll get some insight from him, who was around Muffet for quite a few years.
That's right.
You had some pretty good victories along the way to call.
Very true.
That's coming up next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Sean had the opportunity to call Notre Dame women's basketball games, about 12 years ago.
2001 to 2008.
There you go. You got to know Muffin McGraw very well. So the five biggest reasons the Notre Dame women's basketball coach has had a Hall of Fame coaching career. We'll go 5-1. Here comes answer number five.
Well, I'll start off with her competitiveness. Muffin McGraw is one of the most competitive people I think that you're ever going to meet, whether it's basketball, crossword puzzles, just about anything. She wants to beat you. So I think competitiveness is what drives. It's a common trait for most of the greats, and it definitely drives her.
Sounds like one of those individuals that doesn't care about the winning, just doesn't want to lose.
That's,
you know,
I think there's a lot of that.
Number four,
trust. She has trust in both her assistants and her players as well. She finds the right people and holds them to high standards, and she lets her assistants coach and her players play. She's not overcoaching or micromanaging. She trusts them to do their jobs.
Five biggest reasons why Muffin McGraw's had a Hall of Fame coaching career. Answer number three.
I would say honesty is the one that I put here. And I mean that that brutal honesty sometimes. She's got that Philly. She's from Philly, and she has that blunt, no-nonsense East Coach kind of honesty and approach to her. There are some players who I think can't handle that, but at the end of the day, you win with players who want that kind of honesty and to know where they stand and what they need to do to get better, and she gives them that.
Toughest job on the team is to be the starting point guard because she was a point guard
right.
And has higher expectations probably for that position from what I understand.
Absolutely right.
Number two.
Number two is adaptability, and I think that
this year.
That's right. I mean, if you look at this year in the micro, I think that it stands out. But even in the long term as well, I mean, this is her 31st year at Notre Dame. You think things have changed a little bit in the game since 1987 when she got here? You don't have the kind of success that she's had. 23rd straight year they're going to be in the NCAA tournament without adaptability.
Five biggest reasons why Muffin McGraw's had a Hall of Fame coaching career. Sean has listed competitive, trust, honesty, adaptability, and answer number one.
At the top of the list is just the results that all those things have created. The results in the resume she's built. This is going to be the 23rd straight NCAA tournament. They've been to 7 Final Fours, 5 national title games, and of course, a national championship as well. And she's one of only 16 coaches who can say they've won an NCAA women's basketball national championship. So think about that.
Very small list.
Yep.
That is today's My Five Question of the Day. 4 minutes in front of the top of the hour. 96.1 WSBT. Still to come, a little bit more on the Irish basketball team beating Wake Forest. Bonzi Colson met the media today. We'll take a look at the Big Ten bracket. We didn't get to hockey in the first hour. Maybe we can get to it in this hour. Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left! Notre Dame leads.
Malpas again. Backhands. He scores.
Down to the corner. Jablonski. Three is good.
Andrew steps in. He's going to throw deep for T.Y. He's got it.
Flips to Jenkins. Three for the win. It's good. Villanova wins it.
He tied. It is a touchdown. New England wins.
Adios. Cubs win their ninth in a row.
Miles Boykin is in the end zone. The Irish have come back.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Styers.
Sports Beat, presented, as always, by our good friends at Budweiser. Longtime supporter of Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat. Hello to all the folks down at United Beverage. We always greatly appreciate their support and being partners with them. Sean Styers, Darren Pritchett with you, 7 minutes after the top of the hour. On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. More basketball conversation coming up. We'll replay the Mike Bray, Bonzi Colson update today on the health of Notre Dame's All-American forward, Bonzi Colson. Also, still to come, we'll take a look at the Big Ten bracket. It is now set. They are ready for some action at Madison Square Garden starting on Wednesday with the always thrilling 12-13 and 11-14 matchups in the Big Ten tournament. That's right. Rapid fire. Quick look at the IHSAA sectionals, which start tomorrow. That's all coming up this hour here on WSBT Radio. Again, Bonzi Colson, 21 points, 10 rebounds. Those were his numbers before he injured the foot in early January. The foot needed surgery. He has been out ever since. We know Thursday and Friday he did some light work with Ryan Humphrey, did some shooting and cutting. But today was supposed to be his first day live with the basketball team in practice. And before practice, Irish head coach Mike Bray evaluated Bonzi Colson in this fashion.
Try and get him in. We will get him in some 5-on-5 today. You know, his strength numbers and range of motion numbers are better. You know, they're not all the way back to where he was in early December, but we want to be smart, and that's it's great that we have those analytics and those measurements that we do in the fall to have a baseline. But he's been doing a lot of individual stuff with Coach Hump and a lot of different things with Tony, jumping on that leg, you know, getting that thing conditioned again from coming up and coming down. But I think today we try a little bit of 5-on-5 and kind of see how he feels, you know.
Still unsure if he'll play that?
Yeah, I think you're very unsure about what that would mean for Wednesday. I think you got to see how much a 5-on-5 he wants to be in and how does he feel tomorrow after it.
So today, tomorrow in practice will dictate the status of Colson for senior night against Pittsburgh. That game, 7 o'clock Wednesday on 96.1 WSBT. Here was Bonzi Colson describing to the media how he feels. Again, this was before he took the practice floor today.
Feeling good. Just trying to ease and get back into things slowly. And, started today. I had to do a jump test and a force test that I had to do, and I improved on it from last week. So I'm just getting better and just trying to take it easy and still staying patient with it. Just see how it feels overall, you know, running on it, you know, defending, shooting, you know, going live is going to be big today. So just seeing how it feels, I think that's the most important thing. You know, I think, you know, these next 2 days, today and tomorrow, are going to be important, how my body feels after practice. And, having great communication with Skip, Coach Bray, and T-Row, and just telling them how it feel, while I practice.
And here was Bonzi talking about what he might be capable of on Wednesday.
I know I'm limited minutes right now. I mean, I can't go out there and play 30, 35 plus. You know, I'm not ready for that, and I haven't played. So, obviously, that's the smartest thing to do. But definitely limited minutes, and just see how I feel.
There you go. That's the update on Bonzi Colson. I would assume, one way or the other, he will be in the starting lineup. And whether he's there on the floor just for a couple of seconds or he might play 12, 13 minutes, Bonzi Colson will have a uniform on and he will participate in some fashion on senior night. And Mike Bray has put it perfectly. He deserves the opportunity to be on the floor and to be recognized by the fan base for being a big reason why this team has been able to accomplish what it has accomplished the last 4 years.
Yep. I mean, he has been at the heart of it and absolutely deserves that. And the fans deserve a shot to see him out there one last time as well. And Who knows? Maybe it won't be the last time.
I'm not saying
that. We don't want to think about
that, though, do we? I'm not talking about those dirty words that you're referring to, those letters.
Right.
Those aren't in my vocabulary.
Your whole face took on a different expression the minute I started hinting at that.
You didn't even say it.
That's
but
right.
I know what
you
you're talking
what
about.
Was coming.
I had a bar of soap. I'd wash your mouth out
right now.
All right, so we'll see with Bonzi. Hopefully practice goes well tomorrow, and maybe we'll see him in some capacity on Wednesday against the winless Pittsburgh Panthers. The Irish could be the 9 seed. Worst case, it could be the 12 seed in the upcoming ACC tournament.
You know, I was looking at the bracket after we were having that conversation. I was looking a little more closely, and the bottom of my bracket, the last couple teams were cut off, so I had to go looking at all the seeding. Like, we were talking, would you rather be the 10 seed as Notre Dame and play 15th seeded Pittsburgh in the first round, and then you'd potentially get 7th seeded Louisville, number 2 Duke in the semifinals if you go that route, or would you rather be the 9 seed? You don't have to play that first round game. You play Virginia Tech in the first round, but then you get number 1 Virginia in the second round. But option C is kind of the one that I would lean toward. And again, you want to be as high a seed as possible, especially considering everything you've been through. But if you were the 11 seed, you played Wake Forest in the first round, then you get 6-seeded Miami in the second round, and then potentially North Carolina, the 3-seed in the semifinals. Isn't that almost the better path? Even though you're the lowest of those 3 seeds, wouldn't you? I think I'd rather have that path right there. I just don't like having to play Virginia in the second round because of how good they've been this year. I mean, it's amazing in an ACC, in a college basketball season where there's arguably been more parity than ever before, and you've got all these teams beating each other. Virginia has gone almost all the way through this ACC schedule and only lost one game, only 2 overall this year. I think I'd do anything I could to avoid that. Louisville, okay. Duke seems a little bit worse than Miami, North Carolina, if you had to go that one of those two routes.
Let's just use bracketology as a baseline for our conversation. Bracketology on ESPN has Notre Dame as number 75 on the pecking order. They are 8 away from getting into the tournament. Mm-hmm. They are the 8th team out.
Right.
With that being said, if you're looking for an answer to your question, if Notre Dame was comfortably in the tournament or on the right side of the bubble, I'm going to take either being the 10 seed or the 11 seed, because all you're wanting to do is gain victories and protect your place in the tournament.
Sure.
So the Pittsburgh-Louisville route would take care of that. You can beat those two.
True.
The Wake Forest-Miami route, that is very winnable as well. Using bracketology as a baseline, with them being number 75, they have to make a move. They have to do something drastic to change their position. Now, there's going to be teams that are going to fall back, too. I know that's going to happen. That's part of this whole process. But needing to, arguably, in this exercise, to jump all those teams to at least get to 68, you're going to have to do something that catches the attention's eye. Now, Louisville and Miami are both in the tournament right now. Louisville barely. I just feel like if you are on the outside looking in and you need to jump a handful of teams to get into the tournament, and Sean, this is not counting, those 3 or 4 teams are going to upset somebody and maybe get an automatic berth or push their way into the NCAA tournament. So I just feel like if you have to jump that many teams and you have to factor, you maybe have to jump a couple of more because of movement around the bubble, the best way to do that is to beat the best competition, and you have the best opportunity to do that as the 9 seed playing Virginia Tech and then Virginia. That's my long-winded answer to your question.
Yeah.
If I'm on the other side of the bubble, I don't want anything to do with that.
I mean, I can see that, But the problem is the task of beating Virginia. And
I understand.
As you said earlier, the only way you're going to be that 9 seed is if you beat Virginia next week anyway. And that's a big enough task in itself, let alone beating them twice.
Here's the thing, Sean. If you beat Pittsburgh and Louisville, are you in the tournament? That means you've lost to Virginia in the regular season.
Right.
So if you beat Pittsburgh, you lose to Virginia, you beat Pittsburgh, you beat Louisville, you're in the quarterfinals, you lose to Duke. That doesn't get you in the tournament. With the way it looks right now.
Okay.
So.
That's why I like the 11 seed a little bit, because I think.
Is North Carolina more beatable than Duke?
Right now, I think they are.
Duke has the bigger front line, which is opposite of the normal between those two
teams. Bagley's been out, and Duke is actually playing better now when Bagley's been out. I mean, he's going to be back at some point, and I don't know how that's going to affect him. But they've played better. They've been, I mean, they're the true 2 seed right now, the way they've been playing without Bagley. Notre Dame showed they came within a point of North Carolina at home. They were in that game down the stretch until they just couldn't hit anything, and it got out of hand at the end. That's why I like that path a little bit. But now the one thing is Miami, again, that was a close game too, and it was at home. But at the same time, their athleticism was really tough, and it still comes down to, okay, so if you get Bonzi back, how's Bonzi going to play? Bonzi creates some mismatch problems for any of those teams that they haven't had to deal with without Bonzi.
Miami, vintage, by the way, is
Bonzi.
A...
If Bonzi is vintage and he can move.
Bracketology has Miami as a 9 seed in the NCAA tournament, and Louisville would play in Dayton in a first-round game, or first 4 game, I guess, as we're calling it now.
Mm-hmm.
So Louisville is not comfortably in the tournament, so you might beat Pittsburgh and Louisville, and that would be 2 non-tournament team victories. You beat Wake Forest and Miami. Miami's in. But if you beat Virginia Tech, that for sure is a tournament win. And then you would get the chance to beat Virginia for a second time in a week. And if you do that, you're in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you be?
Well,
I mean, I would think so.
Obviously, you want the best seed possible. And the one side of it is, if you're the 9 seed or the 8 seed, but most likely the 9, you don't have to play that extra game. And if we're talking about Bonzi being in the mix, that is very good for them. But on the other side of that, as we've talked about before, you need Bonzi if you want to sort of make that last impression and really make an impression on the committee, like, this is what we are now that we're back as close to full strength as we've been on all year, and you've got Bonzi back. You almost want the extra game for Bonzi to go out and show what he's fully capable of and what the team is capable of, because that's that many more chances he has to make that impression on the selection committee.
Colson plays well. You beat Virginia Tech. You beat Virginia twice in a week. You're in the tournament.
Oh, absolutely.
So there is your golden ticket.
That's still a pretty big task.
It's a big task. I've got a pair of aces on the table. I'm splitting them, and I'm going for the big shot. Because I just don't know if I'm guaranteed anything by the other routes. I just don't know if there's enough there to put you over the top. Because as I think Tom Noy mentioned on our program from the South Bend Tribune, depending on how the records end up, they could be 2-9 against teams with a winning record of the ACC. So who have you beaten to get to all these victories? That's why I feel like they need as productive of victories as possible. If they were on the other side of the bubble, I would say something totally different. I would take the 10 seed and the 11 seed, just gain victories to hold your position. But when you're chasing, I feel like sometimes you got to take a chance.
Where's Florida State in the bracketology? Are they in right now? Because I saw they were like, I think, ranked 25th or something. Into last week?
Well, Virginia Tech is a 10, by the way, as of right now, according to ESPN's bracketology. Florida State is easily in the tournament as a 7 seed. They're a 7 seed?
Man.
The tournament is weak if Florida State is a 7 seed, or they are drastically overseeded right now. I mean, they lost to Wake Forest on the road.
But see, that was kind of my point, is you've got a lot of these teams, like Florida State, Miami, they have lost games they shouldn't have lost. So some of these other teams have had problems beating very beatable teams at some point during the year. Just look at what we talked about with Boston College, how they won those games at home this year?
Well, let me read you. According to ESPN Bracketology, the 7, the 8, and the 9 seeds in each bracket.
Okay.
And you tell me how dangerous they are. In the South bracket, according to Joe Lenardi, the 7 is Creighton, the 8 is Seton Hall, the 9 is Alabama. Okay?
Yep.
East bracket, the 7 is Texas A&M. I think they started 0-4, 0-5 in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
The 8 seed is Oklahoma. Great player, but they have not played well lately. And the 9 seed is NC State. They actually have played a lot better since we saw them at Purcell Pavilion, and they played extremely well against the Irish in Raleigh. So they actually kind of feel dangerous as a 9 seed.
Yeah.
Elsewhere in Lenardi's bracket, in the West, the 7 is Houston out of the American. And Kelvin Sampson is the coach there. Wonder how they got good so fast. I'm not judging. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just asking a very legitimate question. Many people in the state of Indiana are probably wondering as well.
Wondering if the FBI has a wiretap on him someplace.
Oh my God. Well, he had a long list of calls that were not allowed back in the day.
Yep.
Okay, so Houston, a 7 in the West. The 8 is Butler. Well, that's a dangerous 8 right there. And Missouri, if they get their best player back, that's an interesting number 9 seed. So that bracket actually has some good meat, I think, in their 7, 8, 9. Then in the Midwest, Florida State 7, Arkansas 8, Miami 9. Doesn't excite me a whole lot.
No.
So there just appears to be... This is a year without a dominant team.
Yep.
And I feel like the group of dangerous teams are more limited. I mean, 1 through 6 in a lot of these brackets, you could see any of these teams going to the regional final and winning to go to the Final Four. There's a lot of depth outside, maybe between 5 and 35.
Completely agree. And I'm glad we've talked all about this because this is going to lead us into a rapid fire question we've got coming up here pretty soon.
Okay. Well, we've totally screwed
just
up our...
Just to tease that a little bit.
Well, we totally went out of order on our show today.
We
actually did yesterday's topic now, so we'll do today's topic tomorrow.
Okay, why not?
We're doing the Tom Noy thing today. Just take the script, rip it up, and just wing it. Done.
Eat your popcorn, baby.
Just eat your popcorn and go with it, baby. That's exactly right. And just for sake of argument, the 10 seeds in those bracket, Virginia Tech, Kansas State, St. Mary's, and Arizona State. Arizona State was really good early in the year. They've cooled off in the Pac-12. Kansas State is coached by Bruce Weber. No chance. Virginia Tech's actually a scary 10 seed. I think that's a really, really good ACC team.
Yeah, they are.
I like that. St. Mary's, I honestly have not seen this year, so I have no opinion on St. Mary's.
St. Mary's is, what, typically a New Zealander, an Australian,
right.
A couple, same team every year, big guy, and some guy who's shooting threes from some other country.
Well, it's going to be a Scrabble NCAA tournament because the 1 seeds right now are Virginia, Villanova, and Xavier with Kansas mixed in. And away we go very soon with the NCAA tournament, which you can hear on 96.1 FM. WSBT, and Notre Dame is trying to scratch and claw their way into the tournament. Really, during the 7-game losing streak, it didn't seem possible. Now, there's at least a little hope that this team could push its way into the NCAA tournament. They've won 4 of 6. They've got an extremely winnable basketball game Wednesday. And then the Virginia game is just, boy, if they can put it together for one night, the Virginia game could change everything.
Let me ask you this. Let's say they win that game. They beat Virginia at Virginia. And then they are the number 9 seed. Would beating Virginia Tech and just getting to Virginia once again, is that enough? Is that enough on its own right there? Close game the second time around with Virginia? Or would the other way around... I guess they couldn't be the number 9 seed if they didn't beat Virginia that first time, so never mind. Is that enough? Sitting where they are right now? Or does it all just come down, again, to style and just whatever impression that Bonzi could potentially help make?
Well, Florida State would have to... If Notre Dame wins both games, they're 9-9... So Florida State would have to win two times to win the tiebreaker over Notre Dame. And they play at Clemson and BC. So the 9 seed is very possible.
Yeah.
I could answer that question a lot better after I see everything after beating Virginia. Right now it's hard to guess, but I mean, that's as good of a win as you can have in college basketball right now. Yeah, on the road against the number one team.
Yeah.
So then you win that game, you beat Virginia Tech, and you lose to Virginia in the quarterfinals. Is that enough? Oh, boy. It's close. It's close. I'd like to see what the bracketologists have to say if they beat Virginia, just to get a feel. Are they going to move into the first four line? Do they work their way into the tournament?
I'm surprised they moved into that next four out range, just going 1-1 last week with a narrow win over Wake Forest, because they were not in any of that when we talked about it last week.
I tell you what we need to do is tomorrow is to bring up Notre Dame's full resume, a lot of the numbers that the committee looks at, and we'll see where they stack up.
Okay.
We'll put that on the list of things to do tomorrow. All right. It is 27 minutes after the top of the hour. Bonzi Colson scheduled to practice today. If all goes well today and tomorrow, we might see him Wednesday at home, senior night game against the Pittsburgh Panthers. Game at 7 o'clock here on WSBT Radio. Rapid fire comes your way next. And as we go to break, we need to take care of a contest.
That's right. Forgot about that.
We've had a busy show.
We have.
Things have been left out. We just can't get to everything today. We need another hour. Can we add on another hour for one night? Because we just can't get to everything tonight. And we only have an hour tomorrow,
that's
so
true.
We need 4 hours to take care of that.
Very true.
All right, so here's what we're going to give away. We have three tickets for the Bengal Bouts Friday night at 7 o'clock at Purcell Pavilion, and we'll throw in a sweatshirt as well, which is Bengal Bouts related, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so we have three tickets for the finals on Friday of Bengal Bouts plus the sweatshirt, and let's just take caller number five. Caller
sounds
five
good.
At 574-282-2696. Again, the phone number, 574-282-2696. Three Bengals Bouts tickets and the sweatshirt. And that is for Friday night at 7 o'clock at Purcell Pavilion. Tickets are available for Bengal Bouts right now.
And they're the championship bouts Friday night.
So it's the best of the best going toe-to-toe.
That's right.
Good luck. We'll take caller five right now on 96.1 WSBT.
Hi, this is Dan Patrick, and you're listening to South Bend's number one sports talk show, Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT.
Dan Patrick talking all things sports tomorrow morning, 9 to noon, on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. 25 minutes in front of the top of the hour. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser with Sean Steyers and Darren Pritchett on this Monday evening. Hope you had a great weekend. Thanks for spending a part of your Monday with us here on WSBT Radio. We've talked a ton of basketball so far. Maybe more basketball talk on the way as we bring you another edition of Rapid Fire.
There is more basketball talk on the way. Darren, let's start with this one. Scale of 1 to 10. How much differently do you feel about the Irish men's basketball team after Saturday's win at Wake Forest?
Oh, boy, that's a loaded question because you love the way they pulled out the game. You don't like the fact they're down 9 to a team that was 11-17. Now, it's a road game, so that's very important to point out. But Wake Forest had control of that game with 8 minutes to go, but then lost control. Notre Dame's defense buckled down. So I love the resolve and the way they came through a very difficult situation. I wish they were not in that big of a hole against a team like that with 8 minutes to go. So I'm just going to go right smack dab in the middle of five because there's some good and also some takeaway where you have to think, should you be down 8 points to this team? But you love the way they bounce back and the 16-2 run and the dagger by Farrell, spectacular.
Yeah, I think we're thinking about this kind of in the same way. I give it a 2 because I don't feel a lot differently, but my 2 isn't I feel too better about them. I feel kind of too more concerned because of all the things that you just outlined. They were trailing a team like Wake Forest, an 11-18 team now on the road, but at the same time, It was. It's not easy to win on the road in the ACC, but again, it's not like you're playing Duke or North Carolina or even North Carolina State. It was still Wake Forest, a team that has 11 overall wins, 4 in the ACC. The most important thing, though, is that they did come out with a victory, so there is still a pulse. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't feel a ton differently, but I to me, there's like, it's like, man, a little bit more concerned kind of thing, but we'll find out more about this team, especially at the end of the week when they take on Virginia. So, speaking of Virginia, the Cavaliers, along with Villanova, Xavier, and Kansas, are all number one NCAA tournament seeds in the latest bracketology, which we just referred to in detail a few moments ago. So, would you bet on one of those four teams to win it all, or bet on the rest of the field next month?
You're like this year, rest of the field. I think Villanova has the best chance of the four, but I'm going to take the rest of the field. I just think there's just too much parity this year. There isn't the dominant team. And I think, again, when you look at seeds 2 through 6, I think there's some really, really good teams that have a chance to make a run. So I'm going to take the field this year.
Virginia has 2 losses right now. Michigan State has 3. The rest of the top 17, 18 teams have between 4 and 7 losses. So teams are going out there. You talked about Arizona State. I mean, they went to Kansas earlier this year and won. And they were really plugging away early on. But that hasn't worked out. But there's still a team that I think you have to be aware of when the bracket is announced here in a few weeks. And to me, it feels like maybe 4 years ago when UConn won it all as a 7 seed. Kentucky was in there playing them as an 8 seed. I kind of looked at the history of the last few Final Fours. The last 3, you've had 5 total number 1 seeds and a 2 seed make it to the championship game. I don't think we're going to see that this year. I think we're going to have some lower seeded teams who are going to do some damage. I'd be surprised right now if there's more than one number 1 seed that gets to the Final Four.
South Carolina last year? Who
yeah.
would have thought?
Yeah.
I could have named 40 teams probably before South Carolina.
There you go. All right. Kyle Schwarber stole 2 bases in 1 inning yesterday in a spring training game. You didn't see that? Kyle Schwarber stealing 2 bases? The svelte one. Over under 9 stolen bases for under. Schwarber this season.
I'll go under.
Under still?
I'm still going to go under. I don't want to say you're going to put bubble wrap around him, but I just think you have to be careful with him, and you want to rely on his power and his on base, and I'll leave the stolen bases to someone else.
And the stolen bases, still a long season at 162 games, even if he's not going crazy out there. He's got 4 in his whole career so far. He stole 3 in 2015, 1 last year, but he's 20 pounds lighter now, and he says he's not wearing the knee brace anymore.
Who was the catcher and who was the pitcher? That might have something to do with it as well.
It's very true, too, but he's not going to be going up against John Lester, I guess. So I'm going to go over, though. I think he'll have slightly over because, again, long season, the svelte frame. I saw him in his full uniform, not just with a baggy windbreaker top and all that kind of stuff. And he looks like he's lost even more than 20 pounds. He looks downright skinny out there.
So you're saying he could be a 35 home run, 10 stolen base guy?
Well, see, and that's the big thing. is he gonna keep the power? The more important stuff. Is he gonna keep the power? Is he going to raise his batting average so that he's above 215, his on-base percentage? What was he, 315 last year? Is he going to get those numbers up? That's the most important stuff. But I do think he'll swipe a few bags this year.
315 on base is pretty good when you hit 215.
It's actually very true.
A lot of walks.
A lot of walks, that's for sure. All right, fair or foul? Honda Classic winner Justin Thomas having a fan removed from the gallery yesterday for essentially cheering against him out loud.
I disagree with that. Even though as fans you're supposed to stay neutral behind the ropes, I mean, you cheer for your guy, but it's not common where you're cheering against someone, although the U.S. Open over a decade ago at Bethpage Black when Sergio Garcia had all the waggling. I mean, he would waggle for 30 seconds. They really got on him hard.
Mm-hmm.
It was not pretty. And I think Colin Montgomery's been mocked in America, but he's made comments about U.S. golfers. And I guess I don't have as much of a problem with fans going after him for some of his comments. It weren't necessarily fair. But if you're rooting out loud against someone, I'm not a big fan of that, but I don't know how you can be removed if you're not being vulgar.
Right, and apparently from everything that I read, there was no cursing going on. The guy said something to the effect of, I hope he had hit in the water. And this wasn't during the swing, during the backswing, when he was lining up to putt. This was, you know, before he ever stepped up to the ball, any of that kind of stuff. And so this is, like, you're selling beer out there to these guys, and you've got a different kind of fan. You hear some rowdier guys now at golf tournaments. And this is kind of one of the problems that I have with golf. And I know there's all this decorum and all that stuff, but as long as they're not doing it, again, during the backswing, mm-hmm. when you're stepping up to putt, all these different things, what difference? How are you going to sell these guys alcohol? I mean, it's not like you're telling me that a pro golfer can't do that, can't get heckled a little bit, but a college basketball player can step to the free throw line with the camera and crazies going nuts and all this other stuff. That's, I mean, I just think it's a little bit much with golf. These guys need to grow a little bit thicker skin.
I think there's probably more sensitivity with the golfers because this is something new. They have not dealt with it before.
Yeah.
So they might be overly sensitive. I'm not saying this is all the result of what goes on when the PGA Tour is in Scottsdale, the par three where they have the entire hole surrounded by luxury boxes. They yell, they cheer, they boo. It's really changed the complexion of the PGA Tour, and I'm not blaming all this on that, but it has changed things a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now you hear fans, as you're watching a tournament on TV, yell mashed potatoes when someone swings. I don't know what that means. But you hear people holler stuff other than, you know, get in the hole, are you the man, which has been the standard.
Right.
So things are changing, different attitude behind the ropes. I think it might be something the players just have to get used to. But if the fan is not being vulgar, and he's not being just over and over and over going after someone, I think it's hard to kick someone out for just basically cheering against one guy. Now, if it's nonstop as you're walking down the fairway, then I think that's a different story. But if it was very minor, that's awfully hard to kick someone out.
Yeah, and it doesn't sound like it was that repetitive. I mean, the guy said a few different things, but it doesn't sound like there were any vulgarities. And it doesn't sound, like you said, like it was a constant kind of thing. So I think it's a little bit of an overreaction on the part of Thomas. Mm-hmm. All right, last question for today. And I've been meaning to bring this up. This came out last week, and I'm interested to see what you think about it. Now, I know you're not an NBA fan, but I think this can be kind of a more broad when you look at different sports. The NBA is considering seeding its playoffs 1 through 16, regardless of if you're from the East or the West. And so, like, if you looked at what the standings are right now, you would have potentially three interconference matchups in the first round of the playoffs. And the idea is, regardless of what conference you come from, you would get the best potential matchup once the finals rolled around. So would you buy or sell that format for any of the major sports? Because everybody right now, you line up your playoffs, you seed it on one side, you seed it on the other side, and then those two teams end up playing for the championship. Would you buy or sell this mixing of seeds in the playoffs for any of the sports?
I'm going to sell because you have such an unbalanced schedule.
That's
a Western
exactly it,
Conference team in the NBA has a much more difficult schedule than a team in the Eastern Conference. So I don't see how that is fair. That's apples and oranges when you take a look at the teams that these teams go up against. I mean, in the West, just to make the field of eight is a heck of an accomplishment considering how deep that conference is. I mean, if you have to play Golden State four times and in the East you play them twice, that's a big difference. That could be the difference between 0-2 and 0-4 or 3-1 and 1-1, whatever the case may be. So mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of that. And let me just offer my idea. This is something the NHL used to do. They did away with it, and I wish they would not have. Back in the 80s, when I became a big hockey fan, that's when they had the Adams Division, the Smythe Division,
right,
the Pacific Division. And the playoffs started, with the four divisions, the top four teams in each division made the playoffs. So eight in each conference. And I like the fact that you played within your division first. First played fourth, second played third. Winners go on to play in the Smythe Division Championship.
Okay.
That way, I think it brings extra excitement to the postseason because it's more of a regional tournament.
A true almost division like, winner.
Exactly.
And then you move on.
So those four teams battle it out for one spot.
Mm-hmm.
So you had like Boston playing Buffalo or Quebec playing Montreal. You had extra excitement because the fan bases were so familiar with each other. There are rivalries. There's nastiness from time to time between the two teams. And it was just great fun to see who was going to be the division winner and the representative in the conference title. And so everybody did that. And I just thought that was a lot of fun. And now it's all by the two teams that win the division are in. Now you got wild cards in the NHL. And you don't just have, I think, the excitement in the first round as you could have. Sometimes the wild card teams are better than the teams that finish second and third in a division. So I like the old way the NHL did it to put together those rivals in a little mini tournament of their own. I thought that was a lot of fun, and that decided who was the best team in the division.
Yep. That would be an interesting way to do it. But back to what you were talking about, the fact that you have these unbalanced schedules. Like in the NBA right now, you play four teams or four games against your other four division opponents. Then you play four against six out-of-division conference opponents. So that's 24 more games. Three games against the remaining four teams in your conference. You play just two games against teams in the opposing conference right now. So it's really lopsided in terms. So they would have to justify that. Even in Major League Baseball right now, you get 19 games against four opponents in your division, each of those four, obviously. Mm-hmm. 6 to 7 games against 10 opponents in the same league, and then just 20 interleague games. So there would have to be a lot of adjusting of the schedules to make this happen. And if the divisions are going to mean anything, you have to keep more games against the teams mm-hmm. in your division. So I think that completely skews it. And so unless they're going to change all of that, and then at that point, what's the purpose of having divisions if you're going to have all these balanced schedules? You really don't even need the divisions. It's just a name at that point. So
I was leaving out one division I couldn't think of it. The old NHL had Patrick, Adams, Norris, and Smythe. Norris Patrick was division. The other one, the old Blues and Blackhawks division. Then you had the Campbell Conference and the Wales Conference. That's how they did it back in the day. But
I do remember
I enjoyed that, but it's all changed now.
Yep.
That's rapid fire for today. Maybe we'll have a very, very short and condensed version tomorrow because we're going to have a lot to get to. Only an hour tomorrow due to Mishawaka postseason basketball. Mishawaka and Penn tomorrow night, 6:07 pregame, 6:30 tip. It's the 4A Mishawaka Sectional, 96.1 WSBT. It is now 3 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you. The Indiana High School Basketball Sectional. Action gets underway tomorrow night across the state of Indiana for boys basketball teams, and the Mishawaka Sectional is quite interesting in 4A. Tomorrow night, first round action at 6:30 right here on WSBT Radio. It is Mishawaka taking on Penn, followed by LaPorte versus South Bend Adams. And Sean, Mishawaka went to Penn earlier this year, down in the fourth quarter, rallied to pull out one heck of a victory as they took down the Kingsmen 55-50.
They did, and that was, I think, that would be one of their high water points this year. I think it was the first time in 6 years that they were able to beat Penn. They closed out the regular season Friday with a really good victory as well over against a good South Bend St. Joseph team that ended up 9-3 in the NIC, 14-8 overall, just really impressed. One, with the defense that Mishawaka has played this year and a lot of the poise that they've had in some big situations as well. And I think that's part of why they were able to go to Penn in an emotional type game like that. When you're talking about your rival, a game that nobody on the court had ever won for Mishawaka, and they were able to win it. So should be a really good game tomorrow night between these two rivals.
The winner plays 22-0 South Bend Riley Friday night at 6:30 at the Cave. As I mentioned, the nightcap is LaPorte against Adams tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. The winner will take on South Bend Clay. So that would be a very winnable game for the team that wins game number two tomorrow night.
Well, the other thing about this sectional is Penn is the only team in the sectional without a first-year head coach this year. Sure. Everybody else, because remember Mark Johnson retired from Riley last year. Actually, I'm sorry, I forgot about Clay. Clay, they have a first-round bye, so I wasn't thinking as much about them. But so what is that? Four of the six have first-year head coaches this year. And LaPorte had a really solid team last year and fell in the sectional semifinals last year in a classic overtime game. But they've really fallen back. They only have five wins going into this sectional.
Elkhart tomorrow. Goshen will take on Warsaw in a first-round matchup. The winner takes on Northridge. And over at South Bend, Washington in 3A, early game is Washington taking on Marion. In fact, that's the only game tomorrow night. The winner will take on John Glenn. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser on WSBT South Bend.